wafting across the pastoral vistas of the new basement studios by the lake, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.
This is Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
Down in the new basement studios by the lake. I know we missed a cycle from our last show, which discussed the World Series. And obviously, this is not a spoiler. The Washington Nationals won the World Series.
Yeah.
We couldn't podcast last time because you were in a drunken stupor.
Yeah, exactly. It was kind of weird because, as people may know, the away team won every game.
Yeah.
So we went to two of those World Series games in addition to other playoffs, and they were losses, of course, because it was home. And it was very weird to like go to an event both times, be disappointed in the result, to feel that it was all, hey, that was nice, that's all it's going to go, and then they go back to Houston and they win two games. And so you like celebrating sitting on your couch by yourself because these games end at like 1 in the morning.
Yeah.
Those were weekdays. And so it wasn't like I was going out and socializing. And yet like the moments of actually being in the stadium, at least for the World Series itself, were bummers.
Yeah. You know? Did you go to the parade?
No, because we were out of town.
Would you have gone to the parade? Are you a parade person?
No, not really. And I tend to think those are more for kids, although I did see a lot of funny little bits of video of the team, like up on stage, and like one of the players who's sort of known for taking his shirt off during the celebrations took his shirt off for that. There, you know, Sean Doolittle, who goes – as a Star Wars joke, Sean Kenobi, and he's always playing with a lightsaber, you know, a toy lightsaber, and so he apparently had that, and there was some picture of a lot of just interesting things that would have been fun to see, but no, we didn't make any plans.
Right. They definitely lost their charm, haven't they, now that they've won? It's all kind of annoying.
the biggest thing was, first of all, you know, the Astros, of course, are in the midst of a pretty serious scandal.
Yes.
You know,
of cheating, outright
cheating. And so it's going to be interesting what happens. But, you know, imagine if we had not won the World Series, what, you know, everybody would be talking about now.
Yes. It would be.
As it is, the Yankees from 2 years ago, you know, like they're basically up in arms about having lost in the World Series.
I know, because it's good. We're going to open the show with a little bit of follow-on from our last show. And if you haven't listened to our last show, we did talk at length about the World Series. And one of the things we talked about was the fact that you felt like it was history. Do you now feel that, wow, there is something like you've sort of crossed... Rubicon is the wrong word, but do you sort of feel like, yes,
some
we're in our
threshold
part
of it, like it's in the books, and now like you can never take that
history
away from
you.
Sure, just like UVA winning the national championship. I was really worried it wasn't going to come to pass because I didn't figure – I don't have the greatest sports team luck. I don't have a lot of teams that win things. And so having already had Virginia win the national championship in basketball that year in 2019, I didn't know that I was going to be graced with another big win for a team that I'm a fan of. So.
Well, let me tell you something. Having a lot of teams is part of the way to getting towards success.
Right,
if you're a diehard like me, where you only have two teams and they both kind of suck, then there's really there is nothing to hang on to. Just following on from our last show, we entered into a podcast feud with our friends at Pieces of Grit.
Such as it was.
Pieces of Grit.
I remember, what did we say about Pieces of Grit?
We talked about
it. Was it very feudy?
No, it wasn't very feudy. I think we sort of lost interest, and then I redirected our feud against 99% Invisible, who'd had the back pass story.
Yeah, but I didn't reply.
No. So anyway, Pieces of Grit did actually shout us out on their show last in October. It was on an interview with a lady talking about like toxins in your body and everything.
were we analogized to the toxins?
No, but we were referred to as a banter podcast.
Yes.
Well, yes. Yeah. Is that what we are?
I suppose. I mean, we don't do anything else.
Well, here's the thing now, and I'm going to come back to a moment. Well, no, let me pass on the... So our friend Rachel Stewart, she actually talked a lot about, you know, how she knew me and how she was more happy to enter into a feud. And then she says on the show, and his partner, whose name I can't remember.
Oh, so they're
thrown down the gauntlet. Yeah, they've thrown it. So, yeah, actually quite good. It was a very...
Well, I guess it helps that I just basically said I can't remember what we said bad about them.
Yeah, it was a very backhanded... A very backhanded way to start the feud. But anyway, then there was an interview with some lady about toxins in your body. But we got a special shout out for like 3 or 4 minutes. I thought it was very nice. Yeah. Also from the last show, our good friend, friend of the show, Alex, emailed me to say that his wife, too, was a bandwagon jumper. Because remember how I'd put the boot into my own household for being bandwagon jumpers. He was like, that resonates with me.
Okay.
And he's actually originally from England, and he was interested in our discussion about the back pass rule because he actually himself is an ex-professional footballer.
Uh-huh.
Well, I give him over. Like, he was on Luton Town's books as a kid.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, he's here doing stuff, so he wasn't that good of a footballer, let's put it that way. So I'm now putting the boot into him as a fan. Nice. But he did feel that that part of the show was interesting to him as
did
well.
Did we bring in a new fax, or was it just interesting in the sense that it was...
Well, because I think he's slightly younger than us. Okay, so maybe he didn't
know. When I was telling some other people the story, they're like... I don't remember that happening. I'm like, yeah, it happened in the late 80s.
So he was younger than us, and he did say, yeah, you know, it was this weird... And he was still playing, you know, at whatever level he was, Luton Town being a very middling, you know, middle to average club in England. And again, I don't think he actually played for the first team. So, you know, he was putting a boot into his wife to me, and now I'm putting a boot into him. Figuratively and literally.
Yeah, seems fair.
So anyway, that's a bit of fan interaction from our last show. Let's get on with this show. This is the movie roundup show,
right.
And we will come to that in the second half of the show. But there's also, I'm going to do entertainment the whole way through.
Mm-hmm.
Disney Plus launched its new streaming service.
Right.
You are now, are you one of those dudes?
I signed up before it started, and I paid for a year.
A year.
Well, because it's $6.99 a month, which is pretty cheap relative to everything. And then it's $69.99 for 10 months, so essentially, for a year. So
in 2 months
free. Yeah, you get in 2 months free, whatever that works out to. I guess $12 one day. So it's basically...
You say $6.99 a month. How does that rank with the other sort of streaming? Well,
Netflix is, I forget, 12 or 13.
Oh, it is? I only paid a bill. I don't see how it breaks down in my house.
Netflix raised its prices recently. It won't surprise me if Netflix has to lower their price here. You know, so I was talking to somebody about like the services and how Netflix really doesn't even have that many movies. And so... got to be really kind of convinced to be spending that much money on it.
And $12.99 is a lot of money to pay for stand-up comics who you think you might have seen on something but can't remember their name, which is the reality of Netflix.
Apple, you know, because Apple released around the same time their Apple
Plus. It's cheaper, isn't it?
Or Apple, it's like $10. Like, so it's more expensive than Disney, but less than Netflix.
Oh, so Disney's also...
Oh, yeah.
Disney is also the cheapest. Competitive level, it's the cheapest.
Yeah. In fact, I was listening to some business things, because, of course, part of this is before we get to the show that we're going to talk about is, okay, what are these business models? And for Disney, like, I think it was probably on the Watch podcast,
okay,
where they were talking about, oddly enough, Netflix as the, you know, was the cutting edge. It is the most purely entertainment play now because it just makes shows, whereas Disney is creating a whole world of, sure, they want you to watch the shows, but they also want you to buy the gifts and buy the licensed products and take a trip to see them and, like, kind of buy into the entire scenario there.
Well,
and then Apple, obviously, what they said about Apple is it kind of doesn't care if it makes money on the TV part because it's all designed to put you into their ecosystem of buying add-on services because Apple doesn't sell that many phones. It sells a lot of phones, obviously, but their phone volume sales are way down from what the peak was because people don't need to buy a new phone every couple of years like you used to when it was changing. And so now they're trying to sell you on, you know, storage space and, you know, unlimited music and this, that, and the other thing. It's actually almost sounding a little bit more like Amazon other than the fact that it doesn't sell you any products.
It is interesting because you're right. Netflix is an entity in and of itself in which its whole business is delivering entertainment, whereas, you know, the streaming segments of Apple and Disney are... they're basically just arms of an empire. Yeah. So at that moment, you can sort of take a very, if you're management, you can take this very macro view that it doesn't matter too much if that individual area makes money, but it's contributing.
Because if it's pumping people into buying more stuff, for example, to take it right to the show, the show that I really paid this for is The Mandalorian.
Well, to be fair, I was going to take a shot at you for being like a Star Wars geek, but our fans know that. But what I'm saying is Disney or the media, because I don't quite know where it's come from, they've driven on, you know, for better or for worse, you're getting access to Disney's back catalog, but their first original show, this big one, is The Mandalorian.
That's the big one. Other ones. There's a Jeff Goldblum, like, behind the scenes kind of
thing
where
this is
like,
news to me. And I mean that sincerely. I've only heard about The Mandalorian.
There's a few other things, but they comment they're much lower level.
You know, it's interesting. I think that at a slightly different level, the big Apple show that they were launching their streaming service with was the one with Steve Carell and Jennifer Aniston, the morning show.
Yeah.
And I know they have been previewing on advertising on TV. I've seen a lot of adverts for their next big one, which is like from the Earth to the Moon or something, which is, it's this interesting thing. It's supposed to be, when you watch it, it looks like, oh wow, it's the story of
is
Apollo.
It like Russians getting to the moon first?
Or yeah, so it's like
that.
It's across, it's like alternative history of the '60s, yeah, but of the late '60s space race. But really, at the end of the day, you know, my basic point was Apple have launched their service. Yeah, because there's a show with Steve Carell and Jennifer Aniston.
I mean, that's
and
what they're
Reese Witherspoon.
On, I think.
Yeah.
But from what I hear, it's got kind of mixed reviews.
Well, but wasn't that before we talk about The Mandalorian? I mean, at the end of the day, Netflix launched basically on the hook of, hey, we've got House of Cards. The only way to get it is to get it. So while they're already in existence with the whole video back.
Right,
the CD, the DVD service. When they launched streaming, it was all around. Yeah, you're gonna get a lot of other stuff, but
well, they
hey,
got they had
this
more,
is the only place to
yeah,
get.
When
this.
They did discs, it was really like replacing your Blockbuster,
right?
And you know, they always claim that the reason it was called Netflix in the first place was because it was going to get to streaming. They just knew they couldn't start, so they started by that mail order, you know, sending back and forth DVD type stuff. But I do have to wonder whether, like, how much is by design? How much was like, okay, we can pay this much for money. Well, why don't we just make our own show here? Hey, that worked pretty well. Let's do this and let's do that. You know,
but I do think that's the way, isn't it? I mean, it's interesting. There's another streaming service called BritBox, which is co-owned by the BBC and the ITV in the United Kingdom, which in itself is an interesting thing that the two, you know, this is not a pure example, but this is like CBS and NBC going in on something together.
Right.
They're two competitors.
Right. And we also have, like, for what, you know, we've talked about the stream, but there's all these other services come Peacock, which is going to be NBC's, right. Which apparently.
But what I was going to say about BritBox was they're in this interesting place where they're advertising. Yeah, you can get a whole back catalog of shows, but what they haven't identified yet is that one, hey, you can get us because you can get this, which was the Netflix model with House of Cards and to a large extent the Disney Plus model.
Right, for that,
which is
certainly
the, which is the show.
Part. Worth noting, like just in broad strokes, the Disney also has the entire back catalog of the Star Wars, including the TV shows Clone Wars and Rebels and all these other.
But they're not the draw, are they?
Well, they might be part, but then I was going to go on and say, okay, you've got to, like when you go to the website, in addition to having a bunch of things listed very Netflix-y where they have scrolls, they've got Marvel, Star Wars, whatever the right phrase is for like Disney, old Disney cartoon movies, Pixar.
Walt Disney.
And each one of these, it's differentiated, really? So each one of those, I mean, especially for people with kids, right? Like, you'd go out and buy these DVDs and whatever for keep your – and have to watch Frozen for the 800th time. Well, now, like, suddenly for paying $6.99 a month, you've got all of them. I mean, $69 for a year for what?
It's
50 viable movies
really
to entertain your kids,
it's
probably,
actually
even
really
if you need to get rid of the old ones.
Can you get all the old episodes of The Wonderful World of Walt Disney?
Probably. I don't see why they wouldn't. They need to have the rights. I mean, they also have a bunch of Fox stuff. So they all of the Simpsons.
The coyote.
All of the Simpsons.
The coyote lives alone in the woods.
Yeah.
He can see the rabbit in the field.
Yeah. All
and
the staged,
chase after
staged
him.
Like, killings and things like that.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But I mean,
there's selling points other than the Mandalorian. But in terms of new content.
I want to say this right now. Forget new content. $6.99 a month.
Yeah.
You can't. You haven't at all?
That's like $69 a year. You just look at it like, I mean, I'm not going to watch 10 things on here at least, you know?
Yeah.
The first thing I watched when I was checking it out was the original Steamboat Willie, you know, the first time Mickey Mouse appeared in a cartoon.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's
black,
nice. You got to watch that.
Kind of
yeah,
thing.
You got to do that.
Was
yeah.
And I was also trying to see if it worked. I was out west, and so my calendar was
Steamboat
all screwed
Willie.
Up from my sleeping and watch. Well, there's no voices at all.
Oh, there wasn't?
No. They're just like a lot of noises, even though like the animals had weird noises that were just instruments and not really animals. But so one of the things that people said, it wasn't working. Like, oh, I tried to go on there and the site crashed. And it was like, who cares? Like, it's like going to the Apple store to buy your iPhone on the first day. There's a line.
Yeah, there's a line.
Right? You know, and like 2 days later, there's not a line. So it was, everybody's like, oh my goodness, big meltdown at Disney. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure a bunch of people like cancel their
subscription. It's not working. People, mass layoffs at Disney due
exactly.
to mishandling the rollout. Oh, yeah.
So Mandalorian. is a Star Wars series, live action, for people who don't know, and they've probably seen the previews for it.
First couple of episodes.
They've had two releases. They're releasing weekly. It's not being done like Netflix, where it's all in a batch. It's coming out once a week.
Oh, wow.
So like when the thing went online, there was one there. They put out one more since. I think they're going to do them each Friday night. But even people are sort of like, we don't know what time or what it is.
How do you feel about that?
It's cool. Much cooler that way. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, I don't want to binge watch this. This is fun.
I'm glad you said that, because my buddy, my movie Richard, who also has a show on our network, was telling me that, yeah, if you don't want to pay for it, just do the free weekend preview.
Tell the another. The
but if I do the free weekend preview, I'm getting one episode. I'm not going to be able to binge watch Mandalorian.
But what you can do, like, so I senior scientist's family, senior scientist of the pods family, big Star Wars folks, and I said, well, you know, it's $6.99 a month. It's only 8 episodes in the season. Wait till January.
Oh,
pay for a month. Then. You know, $6.99 to see 8 episodes of brand new Star Wars content, and then turn it off.
Yeah, but what if he wants to get started on the wonderful world of Walt Disney? Well, I mean, you got to get. I mean, you know, not enough hours in the day.
I mean, they're hoping you'll be addicted to it by using it.
All right, so it's one episode. So it's one episode a week then.
Two episodes. Two episodes have been done so far. So it's one per week.
All right, and so and we had this conversation in the green room. You were like, "Yeah, they're only like 30 minutes long," and I'm like,
yeah.
"Really?
Yeah, like slightly variable because they don't have don't have to fit a TV like, slot." But the first one's 38, and the second was like 32 or something like that.
Yeah, which was kind of the homecoming model. Amazon series. I mean, they were all short episodes, and I'll be honest with you, it didn't affect my enjoyment of it at all. But then that being said, I don't know if this was the case because I know Amazon do release some shows weekly. When I finally got around to watching Homecoming, it was already up there, so I was able to binge watch it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that show was originally released weekly.
Yeah. I don't think so. I think it was one big
thing. And so The Mandalorian, at least first two episodes, have been directed by...
It's all written by Jon Favreau.
Oh, it's all written by Jon Favreau.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
And, but he directs a couple. Bryce Dallas Howard directs one.
Really?
Yeah, there's a couple other directors you'd know of, vaguely. I should have pulled up all the information. I think I put it on my phone. But, you know, pretty decent directors. And then the actors, I'm trying to decide if I describe the plot first or
Yeah, go on. Because everyone's a geek.
Yeah, yeah. So
I don't know what's going on with these shows.
They would look at
it. Is the Death Star in it? That's all I know.
No, it is set between the end of the original series, so after they blow up, after they defeat the Empire.
Okay.
And before the most recent stuff, so before the First Order and Rey and all that stuff.
All right, so between... So
5 years after the end of the...
So between young Harrison Ford and old Harrison Ford. There you go. Well, I've just translated the timeline for our regular people.
Harrison Ford. Well, I don't know
if he wasn't in it middle-aged, was he?
Well, but if you count the Han Solo movie, he was younger.
Yeah, so again, it's after middle-aged Harrison Ford and prior to old Harrison Ford who gets whacked in the new movie.
Exactly.
Spoiler.
Yeah, yeah, spoiler. And by the way, there is, like, I'm only going to talk about it so far because there's a big surprise twist, and I definitely don't want to ruin this for everybody.
Then don't.
It comes in the first episode you get to.
You can tell me off air because I'm going to watch these shows.
Well, I kind of want to make you watch it to find out. But unfortunately, the twist is part of the way I would describe what's interesting about it. But okay, so it's set in that in between time frame. It has the appearance of a Western. The people have seen the picture. It looks like it's Boba Fett. Boba Fett was the bounty hunter, had a certain amount of lines. Not actually that much of a presence in the movie.
No.
Everybody loved the book.
Everyone
He's
seems
the one
to
who
love
froze
him,
Han
yeah.
Solo, took him around and stuff like that. It's not him, in part because this is later than him, but it's part of the... Either I think it's a race from a planet that comes from that's this big warrior race, and they all have similar looking armor. So this guy is a bounty hunter. They're not all bounty hunters.
It's true. When you watch the Predator kind of looks the same in all the movies, even though he's a different Predator. Right.
If you saw two Predators next to each other,
you'd be like, oh, these two.
They're not the same thing. Okay. But so they have different pieces there. And so, and he is.
The Predator lives in the woods.
He's a bounty hunter like Boba Fett, but not all these people are bounty hunters. They're doling out information a little bit at a time. So what's interesting is, and this is mild spoiler, but not a big deal. The big bounty that he's going to take here, that's going to propel the whole plot for the season is from a guy who is clearly like a Empire guy, but now that the Empire is lost, what happens to all these old soldiers and stuff? So like when he walks into a room, it's a guy wearing an Empire uniform, but it's a little ragged. It's like, imagine like Nazis, like when they've been deposed, but they have a lot of power and they may have some money stashed away and they've got stormtroopers. And so there's a few stormtroopers, but the stormtroopers, like armor is no longer like polished.
Yeah, because they're out of luck. Rough,
you know, and they're just kind of getting by along with what they've got.
So are we to believe that the Empire are defeated at the end of the original Star Wars?
Yeah, that's what they say. In fact, at one point. Because the theory,
the climax of the movie is blowing up the Death Star.
The second time.
And so at that moment, there is, and I mean this facetiously and seriously, there is the natural...
Also killing the Emperor and Darth Vader.
Yeah, I get all of that. Yeah. They do all that, but that's the natural climax to the movie. But what I'm saying is the world of Star Wars, if you're not really an Empire if you're just a couple of dudes and one Death Star. You're actually... calling yourself an Empire is a bit of the... The Roman Empire, they were all over Europe. Well, it wasn't just a couple of dudes in a town in Tuscany.
So
this is what I'm saying is, I, as only a, you know, passerby fan of Star Wars, I didn't realize, oh, wow, the whole Empire went to pieces after retirement.
Well, in other words, to me. I mean, the fact that these people are doing it, I just need
to get this just to try and keep up with all
these
things.
It's a case with like regional people, you know, whatever they were doing, you know, you can't tell how high up this guy is, but he's something.
Okay.
Right. And in fact, like there's a part where somebody's trying to pay somebody with money and they're like, oh, that's Empire money. I can't use that.
Okay.
And so they have to take like different types of money. And so.
You said it looked like a Western, and I want to let you come back to that point because I kind of know where you're going with that. But my question is much more on a very base, you know, consumer level. Does it look like Star Wars? When you watch this TV show, you're going, yeah, I'm kind of watching Star Wars, but I get it's on TV, but it looks clearly like Star Wars.
It is more, it is like Star Wars. Like,
do you know what I mean?
It's a lot like Star Wars. It's more towards Rogue One, like in the sense that Rogue One
Rogue One looks, what I'm saying, on a very base, if someone like me, who's not all geeked up and I turn it on, you know,
100%. It's like they got Jawas in it. They've got a bunch of
right. But what I mean by that is just in just terms
the feel of it.
Yeah, the feel of it. Does it look like Star Wars or does it look like Buck Rogers in the 25th century? No. Do you know what I mean?
It's a big deal. In fact, I was just reading and I got to find out more about this because
it doesn't look like TV. It looks like movies on TV.
No, it looks like
movies. So therefore it looks like Star Wars. Yeah. And I mean this on a very technical level. The production value.
I
should have
looked up the amount of money they're spending, but it's a lot.
So that was my honest question.
But I think it's mostly being filmed domestically. I think it's California and something else as well.
But how many of us know that? If people go, yeah, we went back to Tunisia to film. I'm like, yeah, whatever. But what I'm saying is, but it looks, it has that movie quality sheen.
Yeah, and apparently one of the things they're doing.
And that is part of it.
For a special effect. You know, like when you think of like Star Wars, it was always the green screen and then they put in the computer stuff and they mix it in. Apparently one of the big things they're using here, and I don't know if it's the first time, I think maybe some movies already did, is this something called Unreal Engine, which is actually a gaming, you know, from a gaming platform's special effects.
Oh, interesting.
It's a digital thing where they don't have to do that anymore. They can literally kind of put the special effects in currently with filming it. So they can be shooting the shot and all the computers can fill in all the backdrops and things right there. And so at the end of the day, when they're looking at their daily shots, they can see what it looks like.
It's basically
not,
all the
it's
same.
Not send it off to ILM for 3 weeks and wait for people to paste in.
Basically
all that
everything he did with The Lion King, I'm sure,
could
is
be
an extension of that technology.
That kind of
thing.
So I need to find out more about that piece. Anyway, so that's the plot of it. And the previews, oh, by the way, a couple of names involved in it. The Imperial guy is Werner Herzog. I don't know if you know him.
Famous.
Actor and director.
Yeah,
you know?
Famous.
And so, like, he's awesome. Like he's just playing,
that
he's like
dude
sort of hamming
a,
it up. As this,
that
like,
dude is a legend of 60s and 70s Euro indie cinema. Yeah.
They have a character early on who is it's a limited role in terms of playing a brief thing, but it's Horatio Sanz, who is from Saturday Live. He was kind of a heavy guy. He's not more recently on it, but he used to be on it in the Jimmy Fallon years. And then one of the main characters who I think is going to have more continue. He had a big role in the first two episodes. It's not clear if he's going to keep going on, is Nick Nolte. up with a lot of, it's either in like a serious makeup or it's all been computer
the de-aging.
Altered.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, like, no, he's an alien. Like, he's it's not Nick Nolte. I would not have known it up, but I looked up.
You can tell from his voice it's Nick Nolte.
A little bit. Like, it's not quite Nick Nolte's voice, but it is a weird enough voice that you're like, okay, once I hear that, I'm probably going to notice it more. And then the robot, one of these robots is actually voiced by another, like, Japanese director or something. Like, there's all these people making these appearances in sort of weird ways. There's a speeder guy. You ever seen the big doughy guy who's kind of mopey, does this comedy thing? That's not going to be very helpful. I don't know if I have his name somewhere, but he's like a speeder pilot and then he's dead.
The current trend for this whole Star Wars thing has been, though, dudes getting parts in other dudes' things.
Exactly.
Like apparently, I think, and I might be mistaken here, for some reason, I was on Wikipedia today reading about Solo. Mm-hmm. The Han Solo prequel thing from last year. And apparently, I think Rian Johnson is in that wearing like an alien suit or something, who was at the time making it. So there seems to be a lot of that goes on with all of these. So all these geekos can go, oh, the Star Wars.
So the most interesting, when I saw the preview and you saw it was very Western-y, and having seen Rogue One, I thought this is where it's going to go. Like, it's going to be all grit. You know, and there was even some discussion of like, wait,
Rogue One is arguably, but I like Rogue One more than any of the others.
But, you know, it's Disney.
I'm very,
you know,
upfront,
like,
about that.
A lot of shooting people and things. But the real biggest sort of twist, which was sort of threw me off at first, but I think it's going to be pretty interesting. It's still got like the kid Star Wars piece to it. Like, it's gritty, but and yet it's also got some funny and some sort of, like, you know, when they shoot people up, it isn't like gore and stuff like that, but it's without giving things away, it's got a twist where there's like a cute humor piece of it, and so it's gonna be interesting. I think you know, for two episodes it's successfully threading needle, it's somewhere between Rogue One and the original series in terms of its tonality.
Well, and here's interesting, and I'm gonna to be deadly serious about all of this. When you said to me, yeah, the episode's 30 minutes, I'm like, well, yeah, it's for the kids, isn't it?
Right.
Because there is a notion that
the kids,
you know,
want to sit down and see.
Right. But also, too, if you are Disney Plus, whereas Netflix can deliver all kinds of content, whereas Disney Plus, because they are ultimately a family brand.
Yeah.
There is going to be a ceiling as to what they can do. I mean, it's why Marvel movies are always PG-13, right?
Other than, I mean, to the extent they segment off part of it and they say this is the adult part of it, you know.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Within the Star Wars, I mean, the plan.
But
for
Disney Disney tried that for years with Touchstone. And ultimately,
well,
those movies.
The Touchstone movie should end up on here.
Yeah,
Disney,
I guess.
Must own them,
okay,
right?
Then maybe I'll take back my point.
But in the Star Wars, like when you click on the Star Wars icon,
right,
they're going to all want it to be within the range of
exactly.
Star Wars.
Exactly. They're not going to go, oh, this is adult content. Yeah, there's exactly. The Star Wars just can't go there. Whereas I think, you know, you have a lot of other franchises under Dark Knight. I mean,
yeah. Right.
You know, that can go into some relatively comic book dark territory. Yeah. I think Netflix.
I mean, even the Marvel part of it is going to be darker. I mean, it's still cartoon. It's not like dark.
Yeah, but I think, you know, Star Wars is what it is, and it's got to be as accessible open. And so having,
because again, if you're feeding the fact that you want people to come to your amusement park, you want people to buy toys and stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
like that,
and while I think this is the most moronic discussion to have with people about Star Wars, about did Han Solo shoot the dude first, or if he didn't, within the concept of this is family entertainment, yeah, I get it. That's a discussion that needs to be had, because well, it's not going to look good if our heroes are running around whacking people in the back of the head, because then it's not really PG entertainment, is it? Do you know?
Senior scientist family who I was telling this about when I was saying we're going to be back in Thanksgiving, we'll see the senior scientist family, and I was thinking, oh, I'll bring a Chromecast because I know the kids would really like, they're big Star Wars fans, and so we could watch that. But I was like, I don't know yet. Like, is the series going to be appropriate? And after watching, I'm like, oh yeah, the series is fine for them. I think they list it as for teen, but it's not like it's.
Anything else you want to say about the show before I get to some, you know, the pretty basic?
No, only that it's been renewed for a second season already, so they're doing another season after this. So it's not like a limited run thing; it's going to go on. I don't know whether it'll have a different plot line or whatever it be, but also it's the first of, like, we've joked about the Obi-Wan Kenobi series being on and being off, being on, and it's back on.
Because there's a home for it now.
Yeah, now they've got a place to put it, right? So they're definitely going to do that. So we're going to see a bunch of these things. And meanwhile, they put all the cartoon Clone Wars, which, you know, there's a whole thing in Star Wars where there's all these books and cartoons and
what's
things.
Canon and what's not canon.
Well, they when Disney took it over, Disney sort of officially said, this stuff over here, out. They call it Legends now. So it's like they're going to keep publishing those stories, but they're, I mean, not new ones, but that you could still go get those books or watch whatever the heck it is. But they're like, we don't have to obey that in terms of like what people's backgrounds are. This and the Clone Wars series that they had before, which apparently one of the directors is one of the people who did the...
So Clone Wars is Legend,
Clone
right?
Clone Wars and Rebels and the cartoon series that were released, I forget on what network, but those are all considered real canon.
Very base level. And I'm asking the question this way to allow you to go different ways with it. Is it any good?
Yeah.
And I mean that on a very basic
level. No, I was going to ask you, like, what do you... I wanted to know if you were going to ask, like, technical things about whether it's Boba Fett or not.
And I mean that. Is it any good, or have I watched it and gone, okay, that's where they're going with that? Or is it like any other series where you go, ooh, I saw the first episode, I need to watch the second? Do you know what I mean? I mean that on some very non-Star Wars-y type levels.
Yeah.
Are you sitting there... Are you going to keep watching it because it's Star Wars, or is it any good in that I'm interested in this story now with these characters?
Yeah, and you can't tell yet... because they're, you know, the guy wears a helmet, and he hasn't taken the helmet off for two episodes now, which, by the way, the actor in this is Pablo Pascal, who played, I forget his movie. He was in Game of Thrones, but he's also in something else pretty
good. I don't know. He interviewed William Dafoe in the rebooted Inside the Actors Studio. The
other day. Oh, really?
Yeah, because they're now running that series again, and... I think they do that where they ask the famous questions at the end. But
so I if they're doing what I think they will do, which is... they're going to reveal who he is in increments. And like, so he's not going to wear a helmet for the whole year. And at some point we're going to see more. There was a little flashback of his life in the first episode. And so I think that'll make it really interesting. If they were to just try to make it be like, let's tootle around with our helmet on and shoot at things. And look, but I don't think that's what they'll do. I think it's going to be. So it's near impossible to say. It was certainly the two episodes were gripping enough that, you know, oh, I'm really interested in what's going to happen next. So that's half the battle. Could go sideways. It could go.
I read an article. Right. I think it was on IO9, which is we always reference these things as part of the Deadspin Network. But that's a whole other conversation that we can have. Whatever it is,
Deadspin shut down.
But anyway, they had an interview with Kathleen Kennedy, and they were reporting on an interview with Kathleen Kennedy, and the tagline was, you know, where does Star Wars go next? And because obviously the last of the sort of this new trilogy of movies is coming up at Christmas. When I've sat around and had that thought, I've always wondered, well, where is it going next? And maybe part of the plan is, well, let's dump some of this stuff. Let's run some of these ideas on Disney Plus in TV form.
Yeah.
And then you can do the old fashioned, hey, it was on TV and now we're making a movie out of
sure.
it.
Yeah.
So that does at a creative level help provide some content over the next, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, while people sit around in a room and decide who are the next compelling set of characters to come up with. I mean, I do think there is a, you know, to be fair, these corporations don't get into any of this without having some sort of master plan that they want to follow. But considering that, you know, according to Wikipedia, you know, Solo is not quite considered a bomb, but it wasn't very successful, and it definitely put a halt to this notion of all these other, we've got all these other Star Wars movies going on, because at some base moment, you know, Marvel have been able to create a universe because they have, you know, source material of characters. Star Wars is not quite in the same place because everything from Star Wars has been invented. So now people need to sit around in a room and start inventing more things. This may be part of it, you know. You spin off The Mandalorian, you run two seasons, gets a pretty decent following. People like it. Let's make a Mandalorian movie.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Werner Herzog, are you available? We'll pay you double what you got for the TV series. Hey, Jon Favreau, will you come back and make this the first of a big 2-hour, 2-parter, you know, 1 year, 2.5 hours, the next year, 2.5 hours, featuring these characters and some more? I mean, that's where you got to go, right?
Yeah.
So anything else on The Mandalorian?
Nope.
All right, so those Star Wars, those first three movies are great. Those last three movies sucked. The current set of movies, well, you know, I've got some strong opinions, but the TV spinoff might not be too bad.
I was going to say, you know, worth noting.
Copyright Atlantic Voice.
The movie's coming out on the 20th, I think, of December for the last of that original set.
Again,
trilogy
I cannot.
Trilogy of trilogies.
I don't remember, but I ended up, and again, you'll have to go to Y09 and maybe I'll look for it and put the post up. Although I always say I'm going to do that and I never do that. Directed me to a 1-hour YouTube documentary about Rogue One, which I found very interesting, just done by a fan who talks about some of these things and also talked about how that movie had quite a tortured production and yet ultimately on screen. Again, it's my favorite of all these things, but I've only and I'm now going to be deadly serious. I might actually like The Mandalorian because it doesn't have all these other characters that I'm kind of done with, which is why I liked Rogue One. And I mean that. I didn't want to see any more Skywalker family or any of these. I didn't go and see Solo. I'm like, yeah, I'm done with all of that.
Not sure you're going to like the twist, but...
Okay, all right. No, that's spoiler. Yeah. So there you go. All right, so that is The Mandalorian. I rung the bell because now it is time to total up our summer scorecard. For those of you who are new to our podcast, every summer, my partner and I, we preview all the summer movies by watching the trailers, and then we make predictions based off of those trailers. Will a movie be successful in terms of earning back more money at the American box office than its budget? Will a movie score higher than 60% on Rotten Tomatoes? We have been doing this for 6 or 7 years. Right now, you can go back through the blog, AtlanticVoice.net, search on the archives for every May and June, and you can listen to our two-parter. It is part of our identity.
Yeah, the two-part of the original. This part wasn't two-part. The recap is not two-part of the original.
No,
movies.
No, but the original where we do our predictions, I won for the first time last year, which makes me 1-5-1, because there was 1 year where we Golden Oates lost and it had to be a
reasonably high chance looking things over.
I'm probably 1-6, but
you may win this one too.
So anyway, we go back and this year,
fastball.
Yeah, this year we, and again, right now, if you go to the blog, you can actually go to the banner at the top of the page and click on the link for both the episodes. This year we looked at about 15 movies and we also had a tiebreaker at the end. We're not going to go through these movies blow by blow, but we are going to go through the results and we're going to have a few discussions along the way on some of the films that we physically saw and have strong opinions about, because we do the movie preview because we like movies. We started off with Godzilla. Its budget was $200 million. Its box office was $110 million. And its Rotten Tomatoes score was 41%.
Yeah, what was our threshold on Rotten Tomatoes again?
60, isn't it?
60.
60. So it was, in reality, a double bomb.
Yeah, we didn't vote on the... we did. Never mind.
We did.
I'm reading my notes wrong.
It was a double bomb, and you won the hole.
I know, that's crazy.
So you keep this mark
but
as you go along.
We do...
Did you see...
Like, as a plus one, plus two, right? Like, I mean, like, if you had both right and I had both wrong, you would get 2 points on that hole, right? It's not just...
Yeah, so you get 1 point here.
Yeah, plus one. Yeah,
don't make it... Hole. Every year after year, people hammer my notes from the preview that I haven't accurately relayed the information. But already in the total up show, you're attempting to snow me with some confusion about mathematics.
No, just the way you just... When you said, I got the hole... But I only really got 1 point.
You got 1 point, right. Yeah, because you said it was going to be a double bomb. I said it would be well reviewed critically. Yep. Did you see this?
No,
I watched the original.
I'm not sure if I saw these movies.
I watched the original, but I watched the prior Godzilla on TV the other night for the first time.
Like that.
Yeah, but I must say, I was in with all the criticism from that movie that Godzilla wasn't in it enough. I wanted to see Godzilla do his thing, and it wasn't. But that wasn't. It was a possibly entertaining movie. That one. I'm surprised this one was that bad.
Yeah.
It got hammered. Didn't do well at the box office, which therefore means its word of mouth wasn't good. Its reviews were not good. I mean, it was 41%. It's not even just slightly splat. That's all the way in splat.
Yeah. One of the weird. I mean, as we go through this, we'll see. It seems to me a lot more movies did poorly. Like a couple of years ago, we were saying like everything could make money, and now there seems like a bunch of things are not making money.
You know? Because of streaming TV.
Yeah, when?
I mean, I don't mean that facetiously. That's the truth. People can find other
picks accordingly.
Yes. All right. So my partner leads. We went on. The next movie was Rocket Man, the Elton John biopic.
Mm-hmm.
Its budget was $40 million. Took $96 million in the American box office.
Yeah.
And its Rotten Tomatoes score was. was 89%. We both said it was going to be a hit, and we were correct.
We didn't. We both predicted that, and then we're both going to get burned on the second TV movie, I think.
Yeah.
No, maybe not.
But I do like it. And again, I'm not interested in films that are well-regarded and are a success. I'm much more interested in talking about the ones that bomb, which would then come to Men in Black, Men in Black International. Its budget was 110. Its box office was only 80. And its tomato score, it was joint. Out of all the movies we reviewed, it was tied for the worst reviews at 23%. You said it would be critical down, but you said it would make money.
Again, so that was my rule, generally.
And I want to quiz you on that.
$110 million budget? How come I can't make that? It's Men in Black.
That is interesting, isn't it? Because 110 is not a lot of money these days.
No.
I mean, you know, some of these other films, not even on the list, but I think the new James Bond, the number being thrown around is $350 million in its budget, and that's still less than Spectre and Skyfall. I think the new Star Wars, the one that's coming out, cost like $390-400 million to make. Now, I'm not suggesting it won't make its money back. I mean, that's a slam dunk as there can be one. But at the end of the day, that is a large chunk of change for any business to be throwing around. So 110 for Men in Black,
yeah,
that seems like money in the bank. Yeah,
it'd be easy to get to that far.
I said it would double bomb, though, because I did say I felt like this was a franchise that really, who cared?
You're right.
I hate to say it. If Men in Black is to continue, it should be living a second life as, hey, there's a Men in Black series on Disney Plus. I actually think there's a Men in Black cartoon somewhere, but I don't know who owns the rights to that.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, that's a franchise that's done, and there's another one coming up in a couple that I kind of feel is the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So then we got to
that's F plus one, so we're evened up now.
We're evened up, yeah. Yes, that's right, plus one. So we're evened up. The Dead Don't Die, which was the indie zombie comedy by Jim Jarmusch. I couldn't find a budget for this.
Yeah, there seems to be less information around, which is kind of crazy. But
and so its box office was $6.5 million. So I guess...
Well, it doesn't matter because, first of all, we both picked...
Well, I'm sorry. If you only made $6.5 million, then you didn't cover back your budget. I don't care. I'm sorry. I'm going to say that right now.
Okay. Well, then we're both wrong on that.
Because that's fine. I can be both. It had Bill Murray in it, Adam Driver, Chloe Sevigny. Even if they're working at cost, there's $750,000 right there.
Yeah.
You got all that catering, sets, extras, makeup and special effects. All that's running you above $6.5 million.
Yep.
You cannot punish your budget. You cannot publish your budget, but you cannot run from the Atlantic Voice Podcast Summer Movie Preview.
Mm-hmm.
That movie is a financial bomb.
Yep, and it also critically only did 53% on Rotten Tomatoes. So,
which surprised me. I did expect it to be sort of this kind of like sort of hip chic, like yeah. Hey, yo.
So we were both double wrong, right?
Because
we both said it'd make money and that it would be a critical success. So that's a zilch. There we stay tied. Next one was Late Night, right?
It was the Emma Thompson, Mindy Kaling. Like a rom-com, but without any rom.
Right.
but that sort of comedy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, not like a, hey, hangover kind of jokes comedy. It was like, you know, I can't remember what the word is for those old-fashioned comedies that are kind of square.
Yeah.
Rom-com, but without the rom. Well, I don't know. I didn't see it, so I'm presuming there was no rom. unless Liam Neeson showed up. Its budget was a paltry $4.4 million.
Yeah, I mean, how did they even? I mean, I get the fact that it was small, but I mean, what's her name? The main actress.
Yeah, I don't believe that number. If I've just gone and said that you couldn't make the zombie movie for $6.5 million, you're seriously telling me you could make that movie for $4 million?
Right. I mean,
also because there's no special effects, so that would have been.
Well, but still, I mean, does actor? who is that? What's the name of the actress? Who's
Mindy Kaling?
No,
Emma Thompson.
Emma Thompson, right? So Mindy Kaling, obviously, I think it was her project, so she probably did it for free.
Did it for free?
But Emma Thompson would cost a couple of bucks, wouldn't she?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. So that number's got to be a lie. but it's not going to change anything, though. It got 80% on Rotten Tomatoes, completely fooling me. I'm going to admit it. When you said, oh, yeah, critical up, it's not going to make money, but it's going to be critically well received. Yeah. I laughed at you, like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
These movies are junk. People see through them now. Obviously,
I don't want to
assume, only 20% of reviewers saw through it.
Political sensitivities in reviews these days.
So, what's the score?
So, I'm up by one.
We're going through in a hurry because we're going to stop at a couple of movies later that I want to talk about. Domino.
I have Dark.
This was the movie
Did you say Dark Phoenix? No, it's coming just up in next. Different order in my hand.
Domino is the movie that you put forward as one of your throw-ins. And I said, because I'm
Brian De Palma movie, you know, like it's supposed to be a big deal.
I'm going to say something here. We have had an argument.
As the guy from Game of Thrones, Nikolai Coster-Waldau.
I think Guy Pearce was in it too, yeah. Who I like. We argue every year about the quality of my note-taking. We actually didn't really have that argument this year. We just had an argument about Eric totting up the scores right now. But every year, you like to throw in some movie and go, yeah, how about this one? And I'm like, okay, let's go for it. Let's review it. What else happens every year is before this show, I myself go back and listen to the two episodes of the summer movie preview so I can recollect with accuracy what was said. You threw this one in late. You'd read about it.
Yeah.
You said, do you think it's going to be interesting? And so I said, what the hey, let's score it anyway. Mm-hmm. Normally I would have let you just talk about it.
Yeah.
But we couldn't find its budget, which is becoming more and more frequent now where the studios are hiding budgets for movies.
But on the other hand, we couldn't find if it made any money.
No, and when I went to Box Office Mojo, I actually listed it as zero. It's zero million.
Domestic. It has
zero domestic. So I don't know if
$300,000 or something.
So maybe it wasn't even. So maybe it wasn't even released here. Maybe they tested it.
I was looking at the Wikipedia page while we were getting started here, and it does. I mean, it says it was released. Let's see, released. The film was released on May 31st. Doesn't say anything about, like,
got 33% on Rotten Tomatoes, so it was real.
Yeah.
Because if its score is zero and it was released, and I only say that now because even on a throw-in where you just threw it in and I was not prepared for,
yeah,
I still went and made a prediction, and I picked up 2 points.
You picked up 2 points.
Because I said it was a double bomb.
Right.
And I love dropping double bombs, and every now and again, you blow the place up with one, yeah. And I just did. Kaboom.
Yep. Yeah.
Double bomb.
I brought it to the table, and now I regret it.
And now you regret it. So now we're coming to another movie that ended up being double bomb, and this is a surprise to us.
Yeah, Dark Phoenix, X-Men movie, you know. I thought for sure with the, you know, a Game of Thrones darling in it, and, you know.
All the old gang?
Nobody's going to say these movies were great. You know, like, meaning the series overall. It's got its highs, it's got its lows, but you would think by now they'd have it ironed out. That Wolverine movie was great. Right? Wasn't Wolverine the one with the, like, the gritty...
That was Logan, but starring Wolverine.
Yeah.
Well, no, but even... So I'm now just going to talk about the X-Men movies at their core, and I've said this before. Long-time listeners will know this. I've come to these things late. I don't watch them in the cinema, but I always sit through them when they're on TV. I've really enjoyed the rebooted X-Men mm-hmm. that have starred James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender and Nicholas Holt and Jennifer Lawrence and all kinds of other people. And then I really enjoyed the one where they threw Patrick Stewart in it and Sir Ian McKellen and all these dudes. And I've always said these guys have an audience. You know, they have a hardcore following who are coming out for them. And to a certain extent, they're not made for the casual fan. If the casual fan comes, great, but the hardcore following will come. And up until this movie, now this budget was $200 million, which is big, but it's not that big.
No.
It's not $300 million. $300 million is the new, like, hey, this is what it costs. It took $65 million in the U.S.
Yeah.
So what that tells me is all those dudes have gone away.
Yeah.
Those dudes who are now like, yo, I'm an X-Men guy, I'm getting down there. In the same way that I'm always going to James Bond and you're always going to Star Wars.
Yeah.
X-Men, don't exist anymore.
Maybe in the, you know, at the point when Avengers...
Because 65 million,
game and like,
65 million like, is Friday and Saturday.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right,
if that.
Right. I think maybe in an era where the Marvel movies have so far upped their game as being these epics with the Avengers Endgame stuff that the X-Men seems sort of...
X-Men is a bit Little House on the Prairie, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And I just picked that off the top of my head, yeah, like, yeah, 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 it's kind of...
It's charming and cute.
It's charming and it's cute, and...
It's like When in Foam.
Thank you. Yeah, which we haven't shouted out for a while. So if you stop for a moment, if you haven't, please go to the internet and search, go to iTunes or the blog and search for When in Foam, our all original... five-episode comedy series that we produced and wrote.
I tried to play it, a little bit of it from my phone for Brian, and he's like, I don't really do podcasts. So
forget those guys. Yeah, people who don't know anything. We're not even talking to them
anymore. So we both were equally wrong. I like when we're both equally wrong.
But here's the thing, though. This is what surprised me, because up until this film, X-Men movies had always exceeded, they'd always... Forget the reviews. Yeah. I'm just talking about bums on seats.
Right, right.
Like this one, I think the last one was 2 years ago. And that was the one where they're all in it. Where he goes back in time.
Right, right.
And
right.
They're all in it. Days of Future Past. No, there was one between. No, there was one with Oscar Isaac as the villain. X-Men Apocalypse.
Right.
So even that still did $300 million, covered its budget easily. I mean, this one,
damn it,
it took a bath.
I
mean,
I don't know what it did internationally. I don't have the...
It took a bath.
Yeah.
It's like all those... Did every X-Men guy... Did all the X-Men fans reach 65 at the same time and no longer can take public transportation?
Worldwide, it made 252. It did...
Yeah, so it's a dog.
70% of its money was international, so who knows?
Yeah, but still, if your budget is $200 million, executives are getting fired.
Nobody's going broke, but nobody's getting a bonus.
No, but no one's getting a bonus, and one or two junior dudes are just getting canned just to show, hey, don't be bringing his X-Men into the office anymore.
I mean, I don't know why the review... I mean, the reviews were atrocious, but I don't really know what they said.
Well, but this is the other thing, too. Here's the interesting thing, though. With all these films, all these big... And especially more so the comic books, I think. Because the comic books come... James Bond has a movie fan base. Star Wars has a movie fan base. A large chunk of the comic book fan base, I still believe, are people who are first exposed. And I could be wrong with my theory now. They are people who are first exposed to these characters via the comic books. So they have this extra ownership. They are extra committed. I'm just surprised... That so many people bailed on X-Men.
Yeah, I mean, well, but it's really kind of gone the longest, because wasn't it really the first of the new wave of comic movies? You know, the first X-Men was like, oh, wow, we're going to update this stuff for modern movie making, you know, past the Supermans and old Burton Batman type stuff. Okay. You know, so maybe it just, you know, it's got an arc, and everybody kept doing the same thing.
Surprised,
over and over
again. Surprised me.
It's like, yeah, we get it. Jean Grey gets upset and things blow up.
And we were both wrong, too, which says, I mean, this is a surprise to me, and I don't know.
At least it frees Jennifer Lawrence from having to don the blue makeup. And
yeah. I mean, does this. Is there a sign in here of maybe for the greater Marvel universe that there might be a problem?
Well.
I mean, at some moment you get tired of Avengers. I don't watch those movies.
Because the event, like people who don't know, I don't want to get too geeky about this.
No, don't.
But Marvel, with that Avengers Endgame, ended its arc.
Okay.
Of these Marvel movies.
Oh, they're spoiler.
That's why the
characters. I haven't even started watching those movies, as I always say.
Yeah, so it will be a test. I mean, like, because they're going to, it's not a reboot. They're, you know, they kind of culled certain characters. They've been introducing some younger characters because these people were getting
old. That's
true. Like,
but that's also a creative decision.
Right, right.
So exactly. They must have a plan. Whereas X-Men bombing isn't a creative decision.
No, but it does, you know, when the stakes were the end of the world twice in a row on the Avengers movies, where do they go next?
Yeah.
You know? And it'll be a question like, what does Black Panther carry? Because it was so well loved. But it's that and Doctor Strange and some other stuff.
Well, the next movie we reviewed was yesterday, but I'm going to pull that out and we'll talk about it at the end. We're Blinded by the Light, because that was our sort of tiebreaker. That was the Beatles movie. We had a Beatles movie and a Spruce movie. So let's pull that out.
Well, we had Rocket Man, Beatles, and whatever. And there was a concern that the Beatles.
But we'll get to that.
We'll get the
music. So staying with the Marvel theme, Spider-Man, its budget was $160, it made $390, and it's probably still taking in money. So comic book movies aren't dead, but,
and
you know,
90% no less.
Yeah, I mean, that thing makes money, and it's critically well-reviewed, which I find quite interesting. Yeah,
90% on the Rotten Tomatoes.
Checked out a Spider-Man a long time ago, I'm afraid.
Well, I heard good things about it. I haven't seen
it. But I just haven't dived back in. I checked out with Tobey Maguire. I didn't like Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man.
Speaking of problems with Marvel, like, Disney's out again now. Like, so, remember, like, I'm sorry, not Disney.
Columbia.
Spider-Man is out.
Sony
had Spider-Man and was willing to contribute the rights back for the Avengers things when they all got together. But whatever reason, they did not strike a deal this time around. And so now, like, just talking about where's Marvel going to go, Spider-Man, who was really shaping up to be their young Spider-Man.
Flag
is now back with Sony movie. Kind of thing. Actually, you know, one of the best movies I saw, I don't even know if this year, was that Spider-Man Multiverse. Did you see that?
Is that the cartoon?
Well, it's like a mixture. It's like cartoon.
Okay, yeah, I hear that's really good.
Yeah,
I just checked out. Tobey Maguire put me off
plane.
It. And I'm a Spider-Man guy.
Yeah, well, this is not Toby. Multiverse is a totally
Toby Maguire as Spider-Man. It's like the first time if someone gives you like a smelly cheese that you don't like, it's going to put you off all cheese for a while.
There you go.
Toby Maguire, he's my Spider-Man smelly cheese.
All right,
it put me off Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Next movie I saw, The Art of Self-Defense, a very small indie movie. So small that it only took $2.4 million at the box office.
But since we don't know its budget...
But again, no, it didn't make it.
Okay.
Nothing. You can't make a movie for $2.4 million.
What if they just made a Mindy Kaling movie for $4 million? Why can't you make Art of Self-Defense for $2
million? Well, I don't know. What did I predict? We both predicted the same thing.
Yeah, it doesn't really matter because we both said the same thing. So
it was a small Mindy movie with Jesse Eisenberg. Myself and my wife went, she hated it, could not stand it. And it is this, it is a very black comedy.
Yeah, he's like a jerk, right? Or something.
I'm not going to lie, I loved it. I really did. Oh, I loved it.
You're a dark person.
Yes, it's dark, it's funny, it says something about who we are. But I'm going to warn you, if you watch it on video,
something about who you are,
if you're going to watch it on video, you just have to be in the right mood. Cause there are a few moments where you go, oof, blimey, that's a bit harsh. Ooh, that's a bit tough. Oh, I can't believe they did that, but it's very good and very well done. I really liked it. I went the first weekend, sat in the cinema. There were seven other people there. So I'm surprised they even got the $2.4 million, to be fair. Yeah. I think that number's false.
Right.
I mean, people spent more on concessions for that movie than actually spent on tickets for that movie. That's how few people were in there. But I enjoyed it. It's weird. If it's one of those films that it's never going to be some undiscovered gem, but...
I'm sure it'll show up in cable.
Yeah, and it did some... There's something about...
Maybe it'll show up on Disney.
I doubt it. I mean, it's very bare bones as a film. Like, it's done on the cheap, and it feels that way. And, yeah, it's a movie, you know, it's not going to be Office Space, where down the line it sort of finds this cult following. It's not going to be one of those movies. But I don't know. I thought it tried to say something, and it did it quite well, and I really enjoyed it. On to the behemoth that we weren't going to review, but we did, because we don't do kids' movies, but we felt we had to. And I'm going to talk about this because this is where things get interesting. You nailed this. The Lion King. Yeah. Its budget was $260 million, which is getting up there, but it's actually not too bad. In America alone, it made $543 million. I mean, that was a slam. I mean, that was a gimme.
Yeah.
But you are correct. Its Rotten Tomato score was 53%. Now, I'd said... double up, because I couldn't see how people weren't going to, because it's The Lion King, people are at worst, people were going to go, well, it's not the original, but it still makes you feel good or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you said, no, I think the critics are going to take a knife to this one, and you were correct.
Yeah, I had seen a lot of the previews of it, and I said, wait, what? Like, it just making something about goofy animals who sing, and then like making look live action, it's just so oddly incongruous. And most of the reviews were like...
said that. Like, what are we doing here?
What do we need this for? Like, and it's almost like a bunch of reviewers got together and they said, listen, we do not need this to be a trend. Let's try to stop. Of course, once it makes $500 million, they can't stop the trend anymore. But I think they were just like, no, we're not rolling. Because Beauty and the Beast came out as the live-action one. And look,
I think on last year's Roundup show, I took some shots at Rotten Tomatoes and just movie critics in general. But in this instance, I'm actually going to give kudos. If you are one of our listeners and you are a movie critic, I'm giving you credit, because you took a rather adult, you looked at this movie in the same way that we did, because our first reaction was, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Why do we need to do, you've got a cartoon, why do we need another cartoon that doesn't look like a cartoon? But yeah, I mean, it printed money, but it's interesting though. I mean, if you take the slightly bigger picture, you know, Aladdin kind of failed for them, didn't it? Dick got hammered, yeah, it didn't make that amount of money. So I do think if you're Disney,
You have to think twice at least about it.
And I want to. I was reading stuff online today, and I know it's not Disney, but there's the Cats movie coming, and the Cats movie trailer has been
that trailer, getting like, hammered. How creepy it is,
because it's this funny mix of live action and then cartoon and special effects. So you can kind of identify Judi Dench and Idris Elba and James Harden, but then Taylor Swift, but then they look at James Corden. James Harden is the basketball player. Yeah, I don't think he is in Cats.
Well, you don't know.
And good for him. Sure? Oh, his likeness may accidentally end up in Cats. Yeah, but I do think you're an executive sitting around thinking, yeah, we can print money, but we got to be careful when we embark on it as a project.
You'd almost be better off just doing another animated one. If you want to do a remake, like, okay, let's just do an animated one with slightly different takes or a different way of doing animations. Like, this live action thing is just weird.
You know what I'm going to do? they might create some series and trial it on Disney Plus. Because they've got the effect. Once you own a special effect. Yeah, I mean, but again, what do you need people for with a technology?
Mm-hmm.
Coming out at the same time was Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's 9th film.
Yeah, oddly enough, for some reason I wrote this in my notes, it's Once Upon a Time in America, which is a different movie.
It's a different movie. That's actually Sergio Leone.
Yeah.
With Robert De Niro and James Woods about the gangsters. And, of course, Quentin Tarantino loves Sergio Leone. Its budget was $100 million. It made $140 million. It kind of got across the line domestically, but yeah. I think we sort of said
that. It's enough for you to get the win.
I got the win, 85%. I went to see that film. Yeah. Went in the afternoon on a Friday, took the big, long extender chair, sat there for 2 hours and 40 minutes. 2 hours and 40 minutes. It's odd, and I'm now going to... This is a statement that I made at the time, and I've stuck to it. There were moments when you go, you can get rid of this scene and get rid of that scene, and you could make it 20 minutes less. And yet, when it was finished, I would have gone out the door, gone to the toilet, and come in and watched it again. It's odd for me to say this, and I'm someone who has been on a sort of a slow downward trend, and I said this in the preview about Quentin Tarantino. I love this film. I loved everything about it. I love the acting.
Well, you're a bit of a movie
guy. I'm a bit of a movie guy, but I'm, yes, well, I mean, yes, like you like the
60s, 70s movies, yeah, and that's but what I loved, really was.
Brad Pitt was excellent. Leonardo DiCaprio was excellent. And it's their movie as much as it's Tarantino's. You're just, it's weird. And the way, without getting into the plot, the way the whole film is structured and just what it is, it's almost like, hey, sit down and hang out with these guys for 2 hours and 40 minutes. And in classic Tarantino fashion, it does wander off a little bit and you go, yeah, ooh, you know. But yet, in a strange way, because you're wandering off with DiCaprio and Brad Pitt,
yeah,
playing like, this sort of version, cool, of...
We could just hang.
Well, that was the thing, and you're watching them and you're thinking, wow, they must be like that in real life. Wouldn't it be great to hang out with them?
Exactly, you know, sure.
But it is... I can't believe I'm about to say this. It is the most... It's as close to feel-good as Quentin Tarantino is ever going to get. And not at any moment did I feel it, because it was just as clever as he's always been, and all the references are nailed on, and the acting is brilliant, and without getting into the plot, it is set in L.A. and Hollywood around the time of the Manson murders, so that constantly hangs over the film,
yeah,
this sort of tragedy that's coming. But yet, yeah, when it was finished, I just felt good about everything. It was really, really odd. Normally when Tarantino's done, when you sit through a Tarantino film, you're either going, that was funny, that was clever, that was too much, goodness me, there was blood everywhere, whatever it may be. This one, when it was done, I'm like, yeah, I can't believe I'm saying this. I felt really good when it was finished, and I would sit and watch it again, and apparently the word is that Netflix are going to allow him to put together a 4-hour supercut.
Well, why not?
And I'm sitting there, and again, even though he gets too long and too self-indulgent, I'm sitting there thinking, this movie, yeah, I'll sit through that.
Well, you could do it in two sittings.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. Give me more of it. Give me a sequel. I thought it was great. I really all did. Right. One of the best 2 hours and 45 minutes. I cannot recommend it
higher. That may be a holiday viewing for me and the family. As the family's coming here to the studios, so...
Oh, really?
We might...
We're going to do things
to watch.
Well, we're going to do The Irishman over Thanksgiving on Netflix.
There you go.
Because that's 2 hours and 50 minutes too. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, no, I really liked it. And I felt for him, I'm like, I know he talks a lot about how he's only going to do 10 films and he's done 9. If he stops at 9, stop there, man. Yeah. That's a great movie. Really liked it.
All right. Next.
The Fast and Furious presents.
I need to check
Hobbs
this.
And Shaw.
I find this hard to believe.
The Rock.
The rating.
Jason Statham.
Down here.
I just take information.
Not only because it means I'm going to lose.
Let me just stop for a moment, and we're now going to have our annual argument about the notes. We have the show.
Oh, no, I don't disagree with the notes.
We write
I'm
down the notes.
I disagree with your.
Then in October, late October, I go to the internet to figure out.
I get.
The Rotten Tomatoes score, but also I wait as long as possible so the box office can go as high as possible to get the true definitive result. I went to Box Office Mojo, and this is what it gave me. Now, while my partner searches on the internet, The budget for Hobbs and Shaw was listed as $200 million. Its U.S. box office was $173 million. By our metric, fair or foul, the movie is a bomb. And I say that because I went and said double up. So I'm losing points here.
Are you keeping track of the scores? No, but we both said the money was up. Yeah, I'm keeping track.
Okay.
But you win this one because you said it was critical.
Oh, yeah, I win a point.
This doesn't make any sense. How does Hobbs and Shaw have a critical success and not make its budget back? Like, I can't get the internet to work right now. It's so unprecedented. It doesn't make any
sense. Okay, I'm going to give you two theories. Now, I've just said that the X-Men franchise's hardcore fans seem to be dwindling in number. Either the Fast and Furious fans are not that hardcore of a fan base that are going to go and not see Vin Diesel and Paul Walker, or B, maybe people didn't know that this was really a Fast and Furious movie, even though all the advertising says, every poster says, the Fast and Furious presents Hobbs and Shaw.
There's another dent in the Rock's.
Well, you said it was The Rock, but The Rock's been on a bit of a losing streak. He is living on old laurels.
67%. That's just ridiculous.
It was well-reviewed because apparently it was well-made, and I think it's one of those things where the critics go, well, if you like this sort of thing, you're going to be happy. And it's true. I think it did dish up another... When you watch the trailers, it dished up another set of... It's just another Fast and Furious movie. It just gets rid of some characters that you might not like and brings in some ones that you do.
Seth's on a cruise here. I think Seth's going to take it.
All right, so then
where do we stand here just for a moment? Tied. You're up one. You're up two.
Yeah. All right, so but to be fair now, we have to rank the two movies that we haven't done as movies and then the tiebreaker. So this is not over. I'm up two with two movies to play.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there were three sort of rock musical movies that came out. One was the Elton John biopic Rocket Man, and then one came out at the end of June called Yesterday, which was the Danny Boyle rom-com style film,
right,
which basically imagined a world where the Beatles didn't exist, but some dude who, I don't know if he fell on his head or something, he plays all the Beatles. I don't know what the plot twist is. That was called Yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Its budget was $26 million. It made $73 million, and it got 63...
Just eked out being positively...
Yeah, which surprised me a little bit, which... Yeah. I don't know without reading all these reviews, so I'm now just going to extrapolate and just throw an opinion on top of it and go, people weren't buying into its basic premise. Because the whole movie, it's not a movie set to the Beatles. It's a movie that actually says, no, they, do you know what I mean?
It's right, not, it's not like a...
It's not like
it's the, using the songs.
It's using the like, songs, but it's
not
using...
Not in a way like Beatles-y.
Beatles-y, right, yeah. The whole hook of the movie is... can I digress for a moment? I watched... One of the PBS stations the other week, PBS were all doing their fundraising drive, and I ended up tuning in. I missed the first 20 minutes, and I didn't realize this, and I now have forgotten what it's called, and maybe if you get a chance, you could look it up. Ron Howard directed a documentary about the Beatles. I think it was all about their last live performance or something. So just type in Ron Howard Beatles. Yeah, and obviously when PBS are in fund drive, what it means is you get 25 minutes and then it stops, and then for 15 minutes they want you to send money and they'll send you a mug, mm-hmm, and then you get another 20 minutes. So the whole thing, I had to sit in front of the TV for like 2.5 hours. It was a terrific documentary about
8 days a week.
Terrific documentary. And I think its premise was it was following the Beatles, you know, about through their life show history, but ultimately with anything with the Beatles,
touring years from 60, the touring years,
but ultimately anything about the Beatles is about everything to do with the Beatles. And it goes all the way up into the 70s. Archive interviews, some modern interviews put on top, archival footage, McCartney and Ringo Starr in 2016 looked at the camera and talked.
Mm-hmm.
So while Lennon and George Harrison, obviously because they'd passed away, could only appear in celluloid, you know, McCartney sat there and he said, yeah, you know, Ron Howard directed it and worked with some of his, you know, producing sidekicks. You ever get a chance to watch it and you like that kind of music? Fascinating.
Yeah.
Plenty of music, plenty of footage of you know, things that you don't remember, all kinds of interviews. you know, about, especially when John Lennon had made some throwaway remark about religion, and then it looked like the American tour was going in the toilet, and then you have him, you know, on one of these talk shows sort of saying, yeah, you know, this is what I meant to say, all this type of thing. And again, some very revealing, you know, McCartney, who I'm not his biggest fan, you know, he's quite very revealing and quite self-aware about his relationship and just some of the things that, you know, that always swirl around history of the Beatles. If you haven't seen it, though, I highly recommend.
It's easy to be self-aware and, you know, like self-deprecating when you have a billion bucks.
No, and I get that too, but I think, you know, and Ringo Starr, interesting, and some other people, you know, so for all their orbit. If you ever get a chance to watch it, I think it's on Netflix. I think it was originally on Netflix.
And I don't see it streaming anywhere, obviously.
I think it was originally, and it was originally one of the streaming companies that helped fund it, though.
Yeah.
So it may have appeared on Netflix and then went somewhere else. I saw it on PBS 8 days a week. It's great.
You can buy it on Blu-ray at Amazon, but
it's worth watching. Streaming. If you can stream it anywhere, even for like $2.99, or wait around till the next time your local PBS station is looking for money, well worth a watch. You don't have to like the Beatles if you just like that era. You know, if you're like, oh, I don't like the Beatles, but I like the Stones, or if you just a fascinating look back at just a really important time in in music and music culture.
Uh-huh.
All right, so anyway.
So anyway, we both predicted the same thing, Critical Up, and, well.
And we got away with it.
Critical Up and Money Up. Well, no, because it didn't. Oh, no, you're right, we did. Yeah, it was just. So no points to be gained there.
And there are going to be no points gained in the other one. So the other movie was Blinded by the Light, which was, unlike the Beatles movie, was a movie but set, I'm going to say this lazily, set to the music of Bruce Springsteen.
Well, yeah.
So people talking about Bruce Springsteen does factor in. And not just set
as a soundtrack, but in the sense that
it's a thematic,
it's about a person
and his relationship
really loves Bruce Springsteen, with Bruce Springsteen music. So you get all the songs along the way. And actually,
unlike the Beatles movie, which sort of uses the fact that the Beatles don't exist as a you know,
I'm going to watch that over the holidays too.
Yesterday does seem like a fantasy. Yesterday is a fantasy movie. Blinded by the Light is a regular rom-com movie.
Right. And it, very well reviewed, 89%, didn't make a heck of a lot. It was cheap, but at least domestic. You know, I bet you that made a bunch of money.
But I'm going to say this too. That actually really, really surprises me. And I'm going to put the little bit that, I'm going to put that down to calendar.
Yeah, no. I mean, listen, if there's a lesson in this, it's that if you're a music movie, first of all, be first out and just be the most superficial you can be. Just do a biopic. Like between that and the year before with the Queen movie, whatever that, Freddie Mercury movie, what was that called?
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah. Like, they killed, and they're easily the least sophisticated of these movies.
Well, Yesterday still made money. I mean, it made three times its budget in America. But
it was
Blinded by the Light. Blinded by the Light didn't make money.
No.
And that's so all I'm going to say is I do agree with your point creatively about music films. You know, you either have to be a musical,
right,
where people sing and dance,
yeah,
or you have to be a biopic where people love all that, or I've just talked about Ron Howard. I have no idea how much money those makes. I actually think people will go and see music documentaries. Okay. Remember, what was the guitar?
It only made $6 million. So it made, I would have thought that Blinded by the Light being set in Britain, right? It's set in Britain?
Yes.
Would have made more money internationally, and it only made $6 million. I mean, it made enough to get back its budget, but it's $18
million. Well, I'm going to say this, though. So now, the movies, we've just gone through the movies, and we predict the movies in chronological order. I do not think it's an accident that Hobbs and Shaw and Blinded by the Light were both August late summer releases.
Yeah.
Both of them didn't make money. Blinded by the Light should have made money because its budget was so low and it features Bruce Springsteen. Hobbs and Shaw, a spin-off from the very successful Fast and Furious franchise, yes, cost 10 times as much, but it still should have made money. It didn't either. We have said in prior years that summer seems to now begin in April. I actually think that by August, people are on vacation, people are doing their own thing. It's not like back in the day where, even 10, 15 years ago, I'm going to the cinema in August because it's too hot. Now I stay home and watch Netflix. Yeah. I don't think August releases make the kind of money.
No, it's true.
I mean, even Mission Impossible comes out like sort of tail end of, well, you know, July.
Like, you know, it used to be people go on vacation. You go to vacation somewhere in the United States and you might go to a movie while you're on vacation. But now you're probably off.
I mean, and here's the thing. I, you know, I, let's face it, the movies all fight about who's going to be on the marquee in May, and if not, I'll take April or June. Yeah. No one's sitting around going, let me take the second weekend in August. Yeah, no, Star Wars is not coming out in August. No. Do you know what I mean? If it was a summer movie, it'd be coming out in June again. Yeah. So I think that hurt it a little bit. And again, I mean, so a tiebreaker question.
So we always have the top movies thing, but we both said the same thing.
We said the same thing this year, didn't we?
Lion King would be first and Spider-Man would be second, and we were both right.
We're both right. Yeah, because Lion King made $150 million more than Spider-Man.
Right.
I mean, Lion King sucked up money.
Yeah. I mean, it violates our regular rule, which is normally we don't do, you know, the kids' animated fair. It's only because...
But it's not animated, is it?
Well, I mean, it's electronically animated.
Yeah.
You know, but
I think we had to because of what it was.
I think that's why we actually picked the second one, too, because we're like, well, you know, let's take that out because that was obviously going to...
And then we both said that...
I can't read my handwriting here. It was like something about Beatles versus Springsteen, right?
And we had to say which one made more money. And you said the Springsteen movie would make more money, and I said the Beatles movie would make more money.
Well, then, really.
And I was correct. And I don't take any pleasure saying that because I actually think the Beatles movie, I predicted.
I wasn't saying that the Springsteen would be better critically received. Beatles money. I can't tell my stuff here means.
Yeah, no. It's always okay. Give yourself a point then. I've still won for two years in a row.
But I went. I even in retrospect, I would have been surprised if the Springsteen movie made more money than Yesterday.
I am the champion. It is not an aberration. Yeah. It's a trend.
Well, I need to mark down my lessons from this year, which are don't think the movies make as much money as they used to. Stay away, like you said, from the August movies.
Stay away from the August, yeah.
Size budget.
Yeah.
Or even not with a decent size budget. Yeah, and don't bring in movies at the last minute when you think you've got some.
Here's the thing, though. The only
Palmer, bringing a movie only to lose 2 points on it.
I'm trying to think back
When you think about that, right? Because you picked up...
I won pretty convincingly.
You picked up 2 money points on Domino.
I didn't even know what you were talking about. Yeah, I mean, you did it to yourself.
Exactly.
All right, so as the only one who actually went to the cinema, I can't say it strong enough. If you're not a Quentin Tarantino fan and you're put off by everything that Quentin Tarantino stands for, give Once Upon a Time in Hollywood a go.
I went to a movie this summer, but it's not on the list here. Why?
No, I don't know what to tell you.
What did I see? It was something
over. Not a lot. Didn't you see Ad Astra? That was the last movie you saw? Well, that's not a summer movie. I saw that. But Brad Pitt is still in his, hey, can I hang out with Brad Pitt face? Yeah. Maybe we get him on the show.
Yeah, we'll have to talk a little bit about, our next episode is going to be holiday episodes. There'll be some holiday movie things, but there's, we've gone on long enough. We'll talk about the fact that there's a holiday movie that came out really early this year.
Okay.
And I think that was a big sign of something.
All right. So the 2019 summer movie preview champion is yours truly. Congratulations. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Handshake, virtual handshake.
The Mandolin or Mandalorian, whatever it's called, get on board. It's only 35 minutes.
Yeah. Or wait until June, just paid $6 and you can see them all one time.
This has been the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric. Take care.
You've just enjoyed Eric and Zeph on the Atlantic Voice Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at @Atlantic_voice. You can find the show at Libsyn.com, iTunes, and of course at AtlanticVoice.net. Email us at AtlanticVoice@gmail.com. And now on YouTube, search for the Atlantic Voice. The Atlantic Voice, 3,000 miles of opinion.